Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. Today, I am so happy to have one of Empower Radio's own stars, David Franklin Farkas from The Farkas Files. David and I are going to be talking about Halloween and some of the deeper spiritual meanings behind my favorite holiday. But before I get to this fascinating topic, I wanted to talk a little bit about my experience of Halloween. As a psychic, it's really my favorite holiday. And I think all psychics and sensitives know that Halloween is a special time for them. It's a time when the veil between the living and the dead is very thin, and psychic energies are ramped up pretty high, even to the point when non-sensitive people can feel the spooky energy in the air. The old school name for Halloween is All Hallows' Eve, and the day after is called All Saints' Day, or the Day of the Dead. This tradition about being able to speak to the dead goes back through time and through all different cultures, because it's very true that the veil is much thinner. I think that's one of the reasons why we love to do ghost stories at this time of year. Another thing that I notice about Halloween is that it seems like more people pass away during this time of the year. And I don't have any stats to prove that. It's just kind of like, something that I notice myself. And I really think it's because if you're on the fence between living and dying, it might be a time where you fall off that fence. And it kind of just creates an opening for people that really need to, cross over. I also really dig that people's psychic abilities seem super heightened during this dark quarter of the year between September and December, and certainly mine is. And I was just reading something really interesting. Like, did you guys know that the most common psychic experience is called the deathbed visitation? That's when someone passes away and we have some kind of experience of them coming to say goodbye to us. So let's say you wake up in the middle of the night and you see Uncle Fred standing at the foot of your bed. And you're like, dude, Uncle Fred, what are you doing here? And the phone rings and wakes you up out of that sleep. And it's somebody telling you that Uncle Fred just died. So we really often have this deep inner knowing when somebody we care about passes away. And that can lead to a visit from them. Death is such a powerful energy, and it makes a strong disturbance in the force that practically anyone can feel. You might be experiencing that person in a dream, a vision, or just as a knowing. And this is the most common psychic experience. I read somewhere that about 75% of all people experience something like this at least once in their life, which I think is kind of amazing. And then, of course, to go with our Halloween theme, sometimes when people die, we get ghosts, because sadly, things can go wrong in the process of dying. People get stuck here. We call them lingering spirits or earthbound spirits or ghosts. And they're everywhere. What can I say? They just are. And who are you going to call if you've got a haunting issue in your house? But I'll tell you straight up that who I call when I've got that problem is my guest today. David Franklin Farkas is an expert in helping people clear up their haunted houses. And he's a great friend of mine and a respected colleague, as well as being a host on his own radio show here on Empower Radio, The Farkas Files. Hey, David, how are you? Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. A pleasure to be on your show. I'm so excited that you have your own show now. It's wonderful.
I know. Thanks so much. And I know I've thanked you a million times, but I also just wanted to thank you again on air here on Empower Radio for, giving me the chance to co-host with your show so much. And really, that just made my journey to being a radio show host that much easier. So thank you.
I'm honored. I'm excited that you're doing this. And I hope we continue doing the co-host thing, because it's a different kind of show when we talk about a topic instead of interviewing a guest. So I love it.
I do too. I know. I'm sure we'll keep doing it. So Halloween, tell me what you think. Like, how is it? Do you like it as much as I do?
Actually, I'm one of the people who turns all the lights off and watches TV. Yeah. Well, I also live in a place where nobody's going to find us. There's no sidewalks. It's on a road in the country, so nobody's going to come anyway. But even when I lived in town, I wasn't particularly going to put on a costume and meet kids at the door and have candy. I never did that.
Well, tell me what Halloween is for you. Cause you know, we want to talk about the sort of traditions of Halloween and what it's like from that angle of being a psychic. Right.
And it's in the traditions that predate the Christian tradition that gave us the term All Hallows Eve. This is the transition. It's actually New Year's in some traditions. Mm. It's the transition between the period of the light part of the year and the period of the dark part of the year. So there were all kinds of ceremonies and things that went on at this turning of the wheel, this transition point. But there is a point in every slice of time when what's called the veil is the thinnest, the separation between the physical world, what we now call space-time, and wherever it is that these other phenomena are happening, another dimension, whatever it happens to be. And in a day that's early in the... It's early in the morning, so between midnight and 2 or 3 a.m., which is why all the paranormal investigators love doing their work at that time, also because it's quiet and nobody's around. In the month, it's the full moon, and in the year, it's Halloween.
Right.
So the most intense moment would be... early morning on a full moon that happened to fall on Halloween would be a moment that would make it most likely that you would have an experience if it's not something, you know. And then there are people like us that have those experiences all the time, but it's easier and often more intense in these moments when there is less separation between the two realms. And all of the traditions that we have were brought over by the Irish. They're Celtic traditions. And the idea was that they knew that this was a moment when they were likely to have ghost experiences. And the concern was that someone was going to come back that was not happy with how things went in their life, and they were going to track you down and do something bad.
Really?
And yeah. So the whole thing of disguising yourself was to confuse them.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And the jack-o'-lantern originally in, you know, what became the United Kingdom was not a pumpkin because that was not a fruit that they had. It was a gourd. So they were tall and skinny, and they would carve them with ugly, mean faces and put a candle in it as a way of scaring the ghosts away. And there would be bonfires, and people would gather together because nobody wanted to be alone. And I'm not sure how, you know, the kids dressing up fits that part of disguising yourself, but how it became begging at the door for candy, I'm not sure. Because that, you know, you can look at this holiday as kids getting dressed up and going to their neighbors and begging for food. And I'm like, how did that happen? I don't really know what the transition was from the old traditions.
Maybe the spirits were a little mischievous, because trick or treat, like, we just get treats. But I remember when I was a kid, sometimes if you didn't provide a treat, you'd get a trick, right? And people would like egg your house or toilet paper your house or something, you know?
Right. And it may be that, you know, that was kind of the idea, that the ghost would come knocking at your door wanting something from you, and that if you treated them well, they would just go away, and if you didn't treat them well, they would do something bad. I don't know exactly how the stories went or how the transition to the modern version of it, to our little game that we play. But there was always this acknowledgement that it's more likely that you will run into a ghost. And, you know, the whole thing of ghosts being spooky and creepy is something that I try to debunk all the time. Anything that you don't expect that is a surprise, especially if it looks like something something that you're not used to, it's going to scare you. You're going to have a reaction to it. And one of the things about folks like us is that it just doesn't scare us anymore. It's like, oh, yeah, hi, what's up? It's one of the many things in life that are a surprise and will give you a reaction of some kind of shock and fear. But that doesn't mean that there's anything about it that's particularly creepy. This whole thing about ghosts being mean and bad and doing bad things to people, does that ever happen? Yeah, there are some, you know, ghosts are still who they were. So if you were a mean, obnoxious person when you're alive, you're a mean, obnoxious ghost, and here you are confused and life isn't working because you're not alive. There are certainly mean ghosts and ghosts that are obnoxious, but that's true of the living too. So, no.
Yeah, it's not, I always it's say not, that dying,
not most of them.
Dying doesn't really change your personality. I totally agree with you. And right. And also, like what you said about, you know, being startled. Like, I think a lot of people, that they get startled, right? You know, when they see something.
But the whole thing with ghosts is you start out ready to be scared.
Yeah.
It's part of the thing. We're going to go out and try and see a ghost, and it's going to creep us out, and that's what we want.
But I think there's something actually, what's really scary about it is that it, if it's real, I mean, it's all fun and games, and, you know, I kind of have a bee in my bonnet about paranormal ghost hunters and how they mess around with that. It's all fun and games until it's real, but if it's real, it's not only the startle factor, but then you have to accept the whole possibility of, like, if that's real, what else might be real? Are angels real? Are demons real? Like, it can really rock your world in a pretty powerful way if you actually encounter the paranormal. And I think that, in a way, the fear of, like, you're opening the door into some territory that you don't really have any idea what's on the other side of that door. I think that's what really scares people.
Well, I think, in a way, all of this stuff, and especially the whole paranormal investigator phenomenon, which is fairly recent, is an attempt to either experience that there is life after death or convince yourself that there isn't. Because a lot of the investigator groups are about debunking phenomena, not about trying to make contact. And that desire to know that there's something after we die is profound.
Right.
And we've kind of lost a lot of it in Western culture. There are very few stories that are acceptable. You know, you go to heaven. And, you know, if you expect heaven to have streets of gold and angels with wings, you're going to be very confused when it doesn't look like that. But, you know, there used to be traditions all over the world, each of them with their own story, and sometimes multiple possibilities of what could happen to you.
Yeah. Like the Buddhists have the bardos, you know, and I don't know about you, but I often notice, like, when I talk to dead people, that their experience of the afterlife can kind of depend on what they're expecting, or that they have some almost say in how they're experiencing it. Do you notice that same thing?
Well, there's two things. When I started doing more work that had to do with the effect of ghosts on people, I started, as a geek, reading literature from all over the world. And the thing that came up over and over again was that 80 to 90% of ghosts don't know they're dead.
Mm.
So they're confused. Things are not working for them. And they don't know why. I did have an opportunity once to talk directly to a ghost who clearly was real confused. And when I said, "Do you know you're dead?" he said, "Oh, that explains so much." It was just one of those wonderful moments. So there's that element to it, that they're just trying to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense. But the bardos are an explanation of something that I've seen, which is, if you believe that you've done something that you can't be forgiven for, in effect, you don't forgive yourself. And especially if you have listened to stories that tell you exactly how you will be punished for that transgression. When you die, you will create that by going to where all the people with the same belief have gathered together, believing that they're being punished in the way the story says.
Yeah. So I think the hardest one, some of the hardest goes to clear are the Catholic ones. You know, like if you really believe you're going to hell forever for being naughty, maybe you want to stick around. Like it's kind of a good reason
to stay. They don't want to leave the earth plane because they're afraid of punishment.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll recreate the pub in the cemetery and hang out with their friends.
Yeah.
Because we've all done the same terrible things, and at least we'll have each other.
Right.
And we can be mischievous with the living. But it's really fascinating how much things that people believe affect both their understanding of what's going on for them and also what does go on for them. So they create their reality. And since there's no physical matter in the way of the creation, whatever you think happens immediately.
Yeah, that's kind of what I noticed too with them. And some of them get like stuck in their I think of it as the death loop, you know, sort of like recreating their death story over and over again.
Uh-huh.
That's always tough. I feel bad for those guys.
Well, the level of confusion is enormous. Just enormous. And that's why, to me, all of the things about, oh, this is an incredibly haunted place and we should go investigate or we should experience it, and you get creeped out. To me, that says that there are ghosts there and many people experience them, but nobody has taken responsibility for helping them cross over and go home. So
yeah,
it's a good...
It kind of bothers me when those ghost hunters come in and they kind of stir everything up, but they don't do anything about it. They're like, yeah,
right,
this place is haunted, and then they leave.
Right.
You know?
And
they leave a lot of pissed off ghosts after them.
Right. And, well, more confused in any case. But most of those places that they go are places they pay to have the experience. Mm. So somebody is making money from those ghosts being trapped there.
Oy.
So is that a ghost zoo? Is that a ghost slave plantation? You know, if you're making money from the experience of souls, what does that, you know, what does that say about it? So I look at all that stuff and say, you know, who can give me permission to clear it?
Right.
Whether it's a battleground or an old prison or a psych hospital or whatever all these places are. And they do feel absolutely awful. Mm. Terrible things happened there.
Yeah.
Well,
seems like it's trauma mostly, right? So, I mean, I'm a healer, so I always look at things in terms of trauma.
Right, and trauma, the emotions of the trauma get encoded into the space anyway. So even if there were no ghosts there, if you walk into a place like that, it feels awful. That can be cleared too, but, you know, the ghosts are not the only thing that makes the place feel bad. But I have such a visceral, emotional feeling about all these places that people are proud about how haunted they are and come experience it. It's like, no, if you know the ghosts are there, help them cross over.
Mm.
They can't do it without us.
Yeah.
So which gets me in trouble because it's like most of my other opinions, it's not particularly mainstream.
What could you tell sort of like, you know, the average Empower Radio listener? If they saw a ghost or they felt like they had a ghost, like what should they do?
You know, basically settle yourself down and enjoy the experience. You know, just have a conversation with them, see what you can find out. Most of them are very, very lonely. A friend's daughter, teenage daughter, was the only one in the house that was seeing this one particular ghost, and she was all freaked out and what did it mean about her and all the rest of it. And I said, you know, there are so few people that actually have the experience of seeing an apparition, a ghost that looks like they're physically present, that mostly what you should do is be really excited and proud because you had an experience most people will never have.
You should maybe give out like a gold star or somebody or something.
Something, you know, yeah. It's like, isn't this cool? You just had an experience that people spent their entire lives hoping they'll have. And you just walked into the room and there they were. But, you know, folks like you and I would have a conversation with them and we know the mechanics and the method to help them cross over, which isn't all that complicated. But yeah, it's like, who are you? Why are you here? And do you know you're dead?
Mm-hmm. And if somebody can't, you know, isn't they can sense that the ghost is there, but they're not sure they're getting an answer, how do they handle that?
Well, there again, there are some situations where the physical responds to the ghost, and that can be really strange. You know, the bed moves, or, you know, various other objects moving, or that kind of thing. One of the most common ways that ghosts communicate is knocking. Mm. A knock on the wall, or it'll sound like a knock on the wall. Who knows how that happens? And if you have a way of communicating with them, you can say, can you answer me with one knock for yes and two knocks for no?
Right.
And if they knock once, you're like, oh, well, we've got something going here.
What do you think about the pendulum or the dowsing rods for that purpose?
All of those are wonderful ways to do it and good skills, but most people who are just stumbling into the situation will not have that training. Mm-hmm. But the pendulum and dowsing to me are being psychic for non-psychics.
Right.
If you don't have the extended senses, you can still get the information.
Anything but the Ouija board, right?
The Ouija board is, you know my campaign against the Ouija board.
Me too. Me too. Yeah. Brother, I am right there with you.
Yeah, the problem is it works.
You go to the bad neighborhood.
Right. And it's a direct doorway to that bad alley in the worst part of town.
Yeah.
And if you're a trained psychic and you know how to set up protection and how to assure who comes through the portal and all that stuff, it's a great tool. And most people are giggly 13-year-olds lighting a candle in the attic and trying to see if they get a response. And that doesn't usually go all that well. That's me.
So you do something that I think is so fascinating, and that is actually help people heal their houses. You're the house healer guy, right?
That's what I do, yeah. I do remote healing of land and buildings, also people and situations and businesses. It's all about things being stuck or things being distorted or broken. And I've been doing it a long time, and it's the thing that I do. So
it so well. Like I when I was young and young and didn't know better, I did a lot of house clearings and kind of cut my teeth on that as a beginner psychic. It's a good place to learn. You know, it's like learning in the trenches, and right. I don't do it anymore. So if somebody one of my clients hands me something super nasty, I hand it to you. I'm like, oh my God, I wouldn't touch that thing with a 10, you know, I wouldn't touch that situation with a 10-foot pole. And you just are so good at it. And somehow it doesn't really faze you. God bless you for that. But
thank you. And the referrals always sound like, but I know this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to help you, but I know this guy.
Exactly. And thank you so much for all those referrals over the years.
Wow. So, and if they wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
They would go to househealing.com. And I do a 20-minute free consultation. So all the information to schedule that is right there. We can talk about what's going on and see whether I can help you.
Yeah, and you, because you don't just do houses either. Like, you'll do, like, you know, hauntings on people or, like, de-entifying.
People's businesses, situations, all kinds of things.
Wow. And so are you, like, hiding under, you know, under the bed tonight, or since it's Halloween, like what? Or are you out enjoying kind of the crazy psychic energy that's out?
I'm talking to you. No, I'll probably eat in front of the TV. Turn most of the lights off.
That's fun. That's fun.
Have a few candles burning, and that's about it.
That's great. Gosh, well, it's been so great talking to you as usual. I really enjoy our conversations, and looking forward to coming on your show again. We can continue the Halloween conversation and talk about all kinds of spooky things, and just, you know, have a good time.
We always do.
So happy Halloween, and happy Halloween to all of you guys out there in Empower Radio Land. Thank you so much for listening tonight to me and my guest David Franklin Farkas, and please check him out on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. And I think I hear a whole bunch of trick-or-treaters coming up my door. There's like a whole posse of them. Oh, they're so cute. So I'm going to be handing out my candy, and I like horror movies. I'm going to tuck into some horror movies.
Well, have a wonderful time.
Thanks.